was fucking with this mic before.
Oh yeah, what were you doing with it?
Well, I was. This is my mic for everything.
Oh my
Or,
God, you're recording your singing with the same mic you record our podcast with?
oh my God, man,
Natural reverb.
it's all I got. I know. And then I on guitar on GarageBand, there's like a knob for like room or like ambient. And I think I have like a natural ambience in this office.
Absolutely.
It's not a good ambience, maybe. It is natural. Okay. Oh man, are you ready? I feel this is we never start this close to on time before.
I know we were pretty punctual today.
I know. All
I'll be right back.
right. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome, everybody. This is actually the first time in a while that we said welcome to open up the show. We've kind of delayed it on previous episodes.
Really? Oh,
Yeah.
my goodness.
Yeah,
That's
during
our
the
thing.
Max one, I think it took us like up until like minute six. You may not know this because technically it's not released as we're discussing this.
It's out. It's
But
out.
as everybody knows now, it is out.
It is out, and it's really good. That was a fun episode.
It was a. I made him
Mid
spittle. I made him spittle a little bit there.
sparkling water,
Yeah.
the fizzies in the back of me got me. It was good. We're still buddies. We still have a podcast.
Colton and I are still friends. I have talked with Max recently. He and I are still friends.
We have obligations to each other. We
Just a little dead inside. And as you can see, Colton, I went through a Britney Spears phase right after it and decided to buzz off all my hair.
I just imagine you going, like, turning off the mic, going into the bathroom, and go. I can't remember which was it. Hypnotize,
Mesmerize was my favorite.
mesmerize. It's like the scene in The Royal Tenenbaums where Luke Wilson's like, mesmerize, mesmerize. He just you look in the mirror and shave your
Every
head off.
time I was going through, I just kept naming off a title of one of the songs. Just one more.
Lost in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Lost in Hollywood. Oh my goodness. Well, we are here. We're back. We are not even, we're on the precipice of the Super Bowl, which I don't
We
think
are.
either of us are going to watch
We're not
or.
going to watch, but I think we can culture rob us this.
Okay, everybody, this is a good opportunity to culture rob us Super Bowl. I have not watched a ton of either of these two teams during the regular season.
Same. I'm going to just one step back. For anybody new to this podcast, culture rob us.
No explanation. Obviously, no explanation necessary. What are you talking about? Please go on.
This is us predicting anything. Pretty much predicting anything. A really poor what's the word I'm looking for? Pun for n Nostradamus. And yours truly came up with culture robis. Why not?
That's right. So actually, we have another Nostradamus to culture. I don't know. Culture Robus. I don't know what's happening.
It's yeah, it blends.
To follow up on, which is the Grammys. But first off,
I have
I will.
even more than that.
Oh my God. Okay.
We
I'm
got
going
a
to.
culture robis going down.
We got it. We got a lot of it. I will say, I think the Chiefs are going to win. I
Same here.
just. I've seen too many. I have seen scores of theirs. I've seen the ends of games of theirs. And. They are the like worst great team. They just squeeze things through. They seem to know how to win.
Especially this year. Yeah.
And that just seems to be the way that life goes.
Well, and their best teammate is the refs. That's right, everybody. I'm saying it.
He just says what's on his mind, everybody.
That's
That's
right.
Rob.
I let it flow. Mesmerize is a great album.
Oh my God.
But all that being said, Saquon Barkley, please tear him up. I am so rooting for the Eagles. I just please, please win.
I am indifferent. And that's why if I have like even a little bit of rooting interest, I'll watch the Super Bowl. I mean, I think I have literally watched every Super Bowl. I think this is actually the first one I have not. I just, yeah.
I figure we're going to be done in time to maybe catch the second half, and I'll just have it casually on in the background.
Can I want to divulge, we are, by the way, everybody, way off the track, but in case you are wondering why we're just chatting it up, having a great time, we are slightly adjusting the way that we do things. Maybe that's a good thing to cover now.
I don't know. I feel like it was outside of the flow, but you want to swim upstream? Let's
before,
do it.
This happened the exact time we tried to do one of these episodes before. I kept wanting to try to get back, and you're like, baby, it's the flow.
Let's go.
I just know that someone's listening going, where's the schedule? What's happening? We were technically supposed to cover Sunday Day Real Estate this week. We have decided, and this is actually going forward, we're going to hold off. We're going to do Sunday Day Real Estate next episode.
Yes, we are.
We have it on the books. And we are going to try something out for the foreseeable future where every other episode, we're going to do, what do you want to call it, Rob? What are these episodes called?
The one song episodes.
We're going to think of a better name.
we'll work on a better title for it. But I do have to say, I think this was a brilliant idea. And as Colton knows, that hurts me to say, this is a brilliant idea that Colton had, to where we both, I feel a little overwhelmed every now and then, having to try to do this every two episodes we got to do. Or every 2 weeks, we got to cover a lot of music.
And despite what I'm sure people think is just our huge amounts of success in doing this podcast, we do have jobs and we do have other. I mean, we're also actually songwriters, and we like do things.
Yes.
And
we
like to write, and some of us like to perform, others don't. But
I am not a fan of it, and I performed recently, and truer words have never been said. I still am not a fan of it. But yeah, so the format we're going to do is basically we're going to do an episode where we just cover a song. Maybe we can variate it however we see fit moving forward. And then we'll have the one major act, the one big collection of music. For example, Sunny Day Real Estate. I'm very proud of myself for not saying It's Always Sunny Day Real Estate.
Very fair.
Yeah. And it gives us a chance to, I don't know, compartmentalize.
And freeze us up too. We always have like other artists that we want to talk about, and we're hesitant because, I mean, everybody, 2 weeks to listen to a discography is, I mean, even I think Sunny Day Real Estate is a good example of this. Four albums, but when we, dense is maybe not the correct word, but it was already starting to feel like we were going to do a disservice to the band to try to talk about them today. And that's four albums. And the flip side is there are some times where we want to talk about an artist. Like today, I'll just say we're going to talk about Bob Dylan, like a Rolling Stone, which I'm calling this an Oscar-themed episode for no reason. I just wanted
Yes, listener, there was a small chance as well that we were going to be talking about whatever Wicked song it was.
Defying Gravity.
I mean, Colton and I actually go and see. We went to the Pantages.
We sat next to each other, and when they sing that final song, I'm gonna be for you because I'm for you. And we looked at each other, and we sang the last words with you.
Holding hands, and one tear streaming down.
Some of those things didn't happen, but we definitely did see Wicked together, which I don't even remember how that happened, but I do know it happened.
I remember wondering what your parents thought.
they're like real buddies.
They're so really good friends.
So yeah, and the thing is, we've been talking about someone like Bob Dylan or other people where, I mean, easily over 10 albums for Dylan, way more. And there's always going to be a possibility of that down the road to do more of them, but sometimes we just want to talk about them. We don't get a chance. So it's a nice opportunity in a lot of ways, and it allows us to keep doing this podcast in a way that like we can sustain it.
Yeah, with less stress.
Yeah. Which, I mean, for me, it's all the editing I have to do every 2 weeks.
I feel bad for you.
And Audio Boom's going to raise our rent costs for $3, everyone. What's this?
I did not know about this.
I don't think anyone cares about that. I don't care, to be honest. So
I don't. I believe you're the one who pays for this. So
I'm the landlord.
I do the work. I do the work, and Colton just throws money at it.
So I know we have a couple other culture robinses to cover. We both have the Chiefs locked in. I don't think we need to do scores. That feels too much. But I do think it's going to be close.
I mean, I can't say it enough. I really, really hope the Chiefs lose. But if I was putting money on it,
we both know culture robinses is not about what you want to happen. It's what you know will happen.
Actually, plenty of times for me, it has been.
Okay, so just fair. That's fair.
For example, my next Kolarakis is the Lakers are going to win the effing finals this year.
They're not, but I like
this
to think that.
This is my Kolarakis.
See, I'm not playing the rules of the game.
I know. God, man.
So, I don't know. People, you don't come here for sports talk, but we do like sports talk.
Yes, we do.
And Luka's
a fucking Laker.
And Anthony Davis already went into the
already
locker
injured.
Room with a non-contact injury.
Can I please talk to Mavs fans here really quick? This is something you're going to have to deal with. AD, every time he hits the ground, you're going to be nervous. But he's an excellent basketball player. Yes, he's 32. And yes, he's not Luka Doncic.
And you did get screwed.
And you did get screwed. But you got a good player.
They don't need to hear this from you as a Lakers fan.
Max Christie is, they already got to see it. He's an excellent basketball player.
Christie Front Drive. Sorry. Yeah. That's a fan. We are a music podcast. I had to do that. We didn't talk when it happened, but I thought of you immediately. And then we did talk and we walked through it. I wanted to address what I thought was a kind of concerning amount of Lakers fans that were posting really sad, teary farewells to Anthony Davis. And I get it because you do get for example, Gavin Lux got traded from the Dodgers over the offseason. And I had a moment where I was like,
I'm going to miss him.
Lux was great. He never, I think, really got to his potential. I hate that he got injured in the spring training 2 seasons ago. I think it threw him off, but
in game five, he had the sacrifice fly that kind of put us over.
And honestly, it was sad, but I also thought, but now we have room for other people and we have Roki Sasaki. I'm not that upset. I saw a lot of people who were, it seemed to me that they were upset about losing Anthony Davis and they weren't properly celebrating how lucky you guys are that you're.
We're a world-class organization. Oh, we give love to to AD, whereas the Mavs just keep calling Luka fat and that's it. His conditioning is terrible. I'm like, yeah, but he's still one of the three best in the freaking league. I can't remember.
Did you see the quote today from
the owner?
It was the owner, right?
Yeah.
So the quote, I'm going to paraphrase everybody, but basically he said, I know that to win, if you look at these other past organizations, you have these really disciplined players who are nothing but practice.
Larry Bird.
Michael Magic. Jordan.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Shaquille O'Neal. And I think everyone collectively that watched basketball was like,
groaned.
Shaq.
Yeah, Shaq's the sterling image of conditioning.
No, it's obviously them trying to save face because I saw another article that said they weren't expecting this much backlash, which feels
stupid.
Insanely stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, that was the thing that made me, I was just like, oh, AD, you're going somewhere. That's going to be a bummer. But now we have Luka. Nobody on the Mav side, no fans of the Mavericks were going like, well, all right, we got AD. No, it's all just crying, explaining to their kids that, you know, I don't know, ownership doesn't give a shit about us. I'm sorry, little Johnny.
It's true because honestly, how many other organizations in the league have what you could say is like a bona fide like star to build around that's young, that's theirs, that's like basically in their control and seem to enjoy playing there too. He wasn't asking for a trade.
He was going to sign the max.
That's not going to happen again for a long time, I think. Well,
but this is what the Lakers do. This is why I love my Lakers. We landed ourselves a superstar for the next quite a few years. Speaking of landing a star, did you hear we got Kike?
Oh, did we? Did that, when that, is that today?
That was like about 20 minutes to a half hour ago.
My God.
We got Kike.
World Series at least appearance confirmed. No, I don't know. That's well, we're going to wait for the new baseball season, Kulturavis. We got 10, yes. 9 or 11 days left before spring training. So we have a lot.
Yeah, we will be talking about sports.
Okay. Wow. We might have to start a new podcast.
No, it's called the opening segment.
That's all it is. That's our sports talk. Yeah. I need to share only because this is like an exciting thing in my life. And I don't think a lot of other people care. I don't think you care necessarily.
I care about everything in your life, buddy.
Buddy, what's your mileage on board games?
I've played them.
Pro or con?
Oh, I'm like, pro.
And when you say board games, though, like, what are you playing? Like, what's your...
Let's see. Board games, B-O-A-R-D.
That's assuming, right.
Yeah.
As opposed to...
This podcast.
Okay, fair.
Yep, board games. B-O-R-E-D.
You're in fine form this afternoon.
I like Sorry, but that's just one I remember from being a kid.
That's what I'm... Okay, so there's, like, in my journey, right, there's two periods of this. There's when I'm a kid and board games are Sorry, Trouble, Clue, Pictionary, whatever you want to say. Casey and I, Casey's my wife, if you're unfamiliar, everybody. During,
I'm glad you weren't explaining that to me.
I know. Everybody. During the pandemic and since then, we always liked to play those kinds of games with each other and before. And then we got into buying new board games that are just out. The world of board games, if you're unfamiliar, everyone, has evolved a lot. And we are in the throe of what I would consider to be a pretty healthy hobby that's bordering on obsession with buying new board games and playing them.
Okay.
Wingspan, which is a board game that's about collecting birds.
Okay.
It's like bird watching, but it's like a game that you play. It's competitive. Our another favorite of ours is called Horrified, Universal Monsters, and we have the Greek monster version, and it's a co-op game where you're like trying to take down these different monsters across a board.
What happened? Tell me, dice are involved?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Dice and like little like figurines?
Yeah, little figurines. Okay. That's right. You got it. It's not Dungeons & Dragons. I've never played D&D. I've always been curious. I can't get my wife, I think, into... D&D necessarily, but
I myself have played a few different campaigns. I would like to clarify, I also am not a D&D person, but I have participated.
we have to make these decisions.
I just have to clarify because then I don't need like Miller's listening right now shouting at the speakers going like, I've been inviting you for 4 years to come and play some more D&D. Well, I can't do it, Miller. You guys play for like 8 hours. That's way too long.
I don't think I could swing. I'm interested, and I have been interested, but it's a hard, you know, it feels like a big thing to commit yourself to.
I think you'd be much better at it than me.
It'll be fun. Just today, literally right before this podcast, our new game came in that we've been waiting for. It's the newest game. It's called Finspan, which is I know, this is insane. What do you think that is?
Offshoot of Wingspan?
Yes. And what do you think it has to do? If wingspan is birds, finspan is?
Whales, fish.
Fish. It's all fish. Yeah. It's wingspan fish. And it's very, like, we played one round, not a full game, but one round right before. Literally, it's on the table downstairs, like set up.
I think
to do this.
I think I might be down to a Zoom meeting us playing this game.
Oh, buddy, it is so fun. And it's already a lot of fun. It's, man, all those games. I could give you a top five. I'm going to save it. I know we have an episode down the line where we have literally nothing to talk about. And I'll give you my top five.
No, this is it. This is it right now.
So why did you have a healthy docket?
This is why you're bringing up... Why are you bringing up board games?
Well, because we just got Finspan.
You're just stoked about
all I'm thinking about. I'm like super excited. Like that glint in my eye today. It's not about Bob Dylan. It's... board games. And if someone who's like a relative fan of my songwriting has been like, what's Colton been doing these past 4 or 5 years, longer actually, he hasn't been releasing music. I've been playing board games, guys. I've been having a great time. Sorry.
That's quite all right. You're better than me. I know that. I know over at the band spot every now and then we'll just bust out a Trivial Pursuit, but we don't play the board game. We just pull out like a card and go like, let's see who can answer these questions. Do you want to feel dumb?
What's up?
Get Trivial Pursuit and pull out those cards and have somebody ask you a question. Like, okay, apparently I know nothing.
I've not done those. I did try doing a version of that with Friends once because I thought it was like, oh, I've watched a healthy amount of Friends. No, I have not, apparently. And that's okay with me. I don't need that.
How does this always happen? Somehow I have seen every episode of Friends.
I have too. I'm certain I have.
I don't know why.
Well, we obviously lead very interesting lives. We have a lot of stuff going on.
I mean, I did just play a show recently.
How was it?
As expected.
I don't think either. Have we? I mean, we've had fun playing shows before. Can you think of a show we've played? I know we have. I'm sure.
I just like that we have to verify. We have to clarify that. Like, as two people who like to write songs and perform them, we hate it.
Well, I like to write songs. I'm on record of this podcast as saying I do not like playing live. I don't like
it. I like to write parts of songs.
Don't overthink this right now. I'm putting you on the spot. Your favorite live show that we have ever played. Any band, any arrangement.
The Battle of the Bands at the Hub.
That's a pretty good one. I really did like that too.
That was a fun one. And people were very infatuated with my little necklace harmonica.
It was a lot of fun. It was like that playing at the Hub was great. We played there, I think, 3 times total. You might not have played, actually. No, you did play.
I know I've played there at least twice, so I may have missed one.
There's one show I think we played where you couldn't make it, and that's when we opened for This Will Destroy You, which was weird. I remember that was a weird show.
It took me a second where I'm like, this won't destroy me. You can tell me.
Yeah, it's fine. No, now that was the band.
I forgot that there was a band called that. Yes, I apologize.
But yeah, we played 2 shows. My Friend Sam, the talked about before, opening with Cursive, based in New York. It was a great place because the sound was really good. And that show you're talking about, I remember, was a lot of fun. And I think it went well, which is usually what we don't like, is that it doesn't go well.
we continued the trend. I believe this was Colton Saylor and the She Sells Seashells, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We continued the trend of we are good enough to get second place at Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, we apparently did very well. And I will say that Battle of the Bands overall, if anyone here has ever played one of those, I mean, they're all kind of ridiculous. And it's like, how many of your friends can you get into the venue?
Mm-hmm.
To vote, which I'm proud of the fact that I had basically no friends that could go based. And we got second in the voting.
That's at least my recollection of it. And I felt that we earned it.
There you go,
everybody. Out of 4 bands.
And usually not liking Battle of Bands, and we've done a couple of those. And I think during one for My Friend Sam, I took us out of the running by shouting during the show that music isn't a competition. And I think you screwed us out of that.
You pulled a Mudvayne?
I said, well.
For anybody who's not familiar, Mudvayne won. I don't know if it was a Grammy or an MTV Video Music Award. I can't remember. But they won an award and they got all dolled up. And they went up there and it's like, this isn't a competition. I'm like, then why are you dressed this way? You guys clearly showed up to make this a competition.
It was definitely, I think, MTV Music Award. I don't think they won any Grammys, unfortunately.
Or VMA. Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm not going to remember the year.
I don't
year.
Think you need to say unfortunately either.
But there is a YouTube video of what I consider my favorite performance. It was a No Pants Fest performance. That's a festival that Robbie Coleman put on in Lancaster. That's still happening every now and then, I think. Semi-annually, hopefully.
Indefinitely. TBD.
TBD. But it was I can't remember what year it was, but I think it was maybe one of the last complete full band, She Sells.
Mm-hmm. Was this by any means necessary?
This is the video online is By Any Means Necessary. That was a lot of fun. I had a lot of our older friends that were there, and it was one of those like shows where we were inside, which I enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
People were, it was just a great time. Was it the best musical performance we ever did? I don't remember. I know there's always a moment where I think you're supposed to play a lead track, the lead riff while I'm singing.
Sure. Yeah.
But I just love the moment that we share with each other where we did this sometimes where you look and you go, I don't fucking know.
those little like kind of side grins, those are always fun. But I mean, that performance, I remember, I may have a little bit of that playing in the background. It also might be like dreadful audio just because it was from somebody's phone. But
Chris from Every Atlas, I think.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. The crowd participation was excellent.
Yeah, but probably the best. That was probably the closest to, I don't know, like that kind of a vibe that I think we ever had. Because usually we're playing for people that didn't really know us, and so
and didn't want to,
and didn't want to, and we didn't want to know them. You know why? No. But no,
we were forcing ourselves on them. Don't lie.
Yeah, I think the thing is playing live is. With the kinds of lives that we lead, we never felt like we ever got to practice enough. And it was always like a rushed fear of getting things ready.
It's the horrible just having to get your equipment up there, get your equipment down. Like, I feel like I'm never able to melt into the moment. I feel like even when I'm singing a really dramatic lyric, in the back of my head I'm going like, okay, once the song's over, we gotta tear down really quick, we gotta unplug, or I'm staring off at, you know, some disinterested face, I'm trying to reel you in.
I know. I've always hated the band vibe, like when they're like in the back, like where it's like people like, oh, who are you? Are you my friend Sam? It's like, well, my name's Colton.
Yeah.
But it's like a bunch of like weird street gangs. Like, I hate all of that, man. That's just
so ridiculous. As I said, that's to be expected, is how the show went.
You have something. Go ahead.
I do. We have some questions that we got.
Okay.
By one Leon, whose name will remain partially said.
Leon Kennedy. That's exciting.
Is it Kennedy? Does he have that?
That's a Resident Evil character. Moving on. Sorry.
Okay, I thought it was from one of your board games.
Don't do that. Don't use what I shared with you against me.
I won't. Email us, everybody, your opinion on Colton's board game obsession at no.your.writs.podcast.
We need a bigger shelf. We're out of room on a shelf we have.
gmail.com. Come up with a board game. Come up with a Know Your Rights board game.
That would be amazing. That would be a dream come true.
It never ends.
What is... It never ends, but also it never feels properly ready.
So, I like this.
So what did Leon ask us?
Well, first of all, he said, hope all is well with you two. Parentheses, nice. Not really Colton.
Wow, fair.
Yeah. Then just kidding.
If this is the Leon I think it is, he is always calling me a hipster. And any podcast that he brings me up on, he calls me a hipster, which I think anyone that knows me
knows that.
Wow. It's ridiculous. Huh?
Everybody, I got to see what he was wearing today. I got like the full body outfit that Colton's wearing. It's very hipster to me.
Also, I'll just say that's very much our age, because I don't think any Generation Z people call each other hipsters. It's like bro. Like, we know what bro means to us.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I hate bro. Ugh.
Yeah. Anywho, moving on. What did Leon ask us?
He said, so bro, which artist or album would you say was the hardest for each of you to get through? Now, I have a very quick answer to this.
Okay.
When I first read that, I was like, let me scroll through. And I scrolled all the way to our first episode and went like, oh, it's our first episode. It's Weezer.
Yeah.
I don't think I didn't finish Black Album. I have never listened to Black Album from beginning to end.
That first episode was like, I think we had no idea what we were doing. We had a lot of time to prepare. And yet, like we said, we kind of knew a while in advance, like a month at least, like we're going to do Weezer. So let's listen to all of them, because why not? That's like a perfect format. And I agree. I don't think I got through everything. I think there are in the back half, the back nine of Weezer or something like that. It's a one and done, and not every song I listen to all the way through. And I still feel very confident in saying it was not good.
Yeah. And so that was very tough to get through. I'm maybe typical Rob, I'm going to kind of reshape Leon's question to fit what I want to say. Mm-hmm. The first episode I remember being really nervous about. It was the first time on the show that I didn't know the artist. Well, I didn't think I knew the artist. I apparently did know one song by Haim. But that was the first time that I went, I don't know what to expect here. And that was probably the most I was nervous. Probably Haim, Caroline Polachek. Outside of that, I've had enough familiarity with the artists that I can flow with it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I remember when you said Erykah Badu, I was okay, this is a little outside of what we've done so far, but I know I'm going to have a good time. I know that I dig Erykah Badu.
Yeah.
Haim, I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's about to happen.
That's an interesting one. See, I think, and I agree. I think the easy answer is that Weezer was the hardest, but it also wasn't because we didn't kind of know what we were doing. And I don't think we had built up our like ways that we wanted to talk about things.
We didn't know that 10 plus albums is a no-no.
And yet we knew we were going to do every other week. I don't know what we had in mind. Anywho, I think for me, there's two ways to think of it. One is like bands I didn't enjoy. And so clearly we could name bands Minus I didn't enjoy.
Minus the Bear was the first one that popped in my head.
Streetlight Manifesto, whatever you want to call it. And I think here's the thing where I would say more seriously about like a band like Streetlight or others, where one thing I try to do is like, I want to try to figure out what I think they're like, the kind of ideal form of the band is. Right. Okay. And like, we do this with like best song. Like, what is it that they're trying to achieve? Because that's honestly how I try to discuss these bands is there's what I would prefer, but there's also what I know someone is trying to do and accomplish. And so it's like trying to figure out what that is and like And I think with a band like Streetlight Manifesto, in all seriousness, I don't think I ever really figured that out. So that's one part of it. The other part, though, is bands where I just have I can't put myself in the tradition. And that's probably Daft Punk was.
Oh, okay.
It was difficult. And I think we both, like, it ended up being a very fun episode. And it's also one that's done very well, which I think is just a testament to how big actually Daft Punk is.
I think Leon would like you saying that.
But it was hard. And I think we both thought it was hard because listening to the first two albums of Daft Punk, it was like, oh, shoot.
I wasn't sure if there was going to be an evolution to their music. So listening to the first album, I'm like, is this what I'm in store for three more albums?
And we were so nervous. And we were, and we said this on the episode to our credit. Mm-hmm. It's like we were bent over a desk at a desktop. Going like that's not how you listen to Daft Punk, and then it's like, how do we talk about this critically, like, in any way that's sensical?
Yeah For a moment there, it did feel like I was just in a dark room that had a strobe light going, and it's just that first album Daft Punk. I'm like, I'm being tortured. The long haul, I ended up enjoying that one, but and actually I still love I can't remember the name of the album off the top of my head, but I believe it was their fourth one. Let me say it.
Curious if like doing this podcast makes us like smarter, like have like a wider knowledge of music, I feel like there's more that I've forgotten.
Yeah, my capacity for knowledge is very limited, everybody. I'm sorry.
If it's
Random Access Memory.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's an incredible album.
Was that both of our best albums?
I believe so. You might have gone with let's see, there's Human After All, Discovery was a decent one, but I think we probably settled on that. Oh no, I think Leo, a completely different person.
Yeah.
Leo's favorite was Discovery, I believe.
Fascinating. Okay.
Speaking of Leon, we have one more question.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we may have already addressed it. Sorry. Which one was the hardest to rate? Which artist was the hardest to rate?
That one's hard.
That's a really difficult question. I got to look again through our many episode because we are in our fortunate 50s.
I think the assumption, I'm teaching logic in college right now, and so I'm talking to my students about those warrants or assumptions. Mm-hmm. I know, right? And the assumption is that like the rating system, like I kind of agonize over it. The reality is I really don't, because it's kind of, I don't know if I usually have.
I think overall you're right. It probably has to be guests. Whenever we've had a guest is when I feel a little more nervous about the reigning or the ranking.
Especially if it's a band that they have a personal like take on, and you don't want to like upset people.
Yeah. And I think that's it. Is like when we had when we did like David Bazan, you know, it's just like both of us knew we were going to just be polite. You know, nothing against you, Joe. I know that we're close friends. Matt, I didn't know as well. I was like, whatever they say, I'm probably just going to nod my head, smile, and just keep whatever opinion I have in the back. Now, don't get me wrong. I did enjoy David Bazan, but I probably glorified it a little more than I would if it was just you and I.
The opposite thing for me is a band like, I'm thinking of The Hives for some reason.
Okay.
I think the Yeah Yeah Yeahs were there too. Like bands where there is a kind of like sameness. And early Arctic Monkeys, I felt this way also. Maybe Arctic Monkeys was the hardest. Like the first part of Arctic Monkeys we did, I think those bands have like the same attack to a lot of their songs. Like The Hives are a great example where they do one thing really, really well.
I agree.
And so it's like that over and over again. So like the overall experience, I don't know if I enjoyed as much by the end of it because it was so much of what The Hives do, but in small doses. Yeah. Like sometimes, like if you watch The Hives play like one song, like if you watch like a video of them playing Hate to Say I Told You So, I'm like, they're the greatest band ever.
They're
like
an amazing live act.
That's better sure. than that. Yeah. When I listen to four or five Hives albums in a row sitting down, I'm a little tired by the end and I'm a little bored. And honestly, trying to like rate the quality of the songwriting, like how I think it works, but then also like I didn't have a great time sometimes. So it's hard to reconcile that.
I completely agree. Cause I think it was, how am I forgetting the name of this act? And you brought them up fairly early in our, the Milk Carton Kids.
Yeah.
I remember as much as I enjoy the Milk Carton Kids, listening to just the Milk Carton Kids for 2 weeks is draining.
I totally agree with you. And I remember that about them too. That's another question that comes out of this, which is, are there bands that you enjoyed that you enjoy less after we covered them? And I think minus the fact that it made me, the album I rated as my favorite from Milk Carton Kids, the, All the Things I Did or Didn't Do. Mm-hmm. I love that album. There's a lot of the other stuff that I don't like as much now, like, or just doesn't hit me the same as it used to.
That's fine. I think our answer to Leon, thank you for the questions. Mm-hmm. Our answer to that second question is all of them.
Yeah.
All clearly. Of them were really hard to get through and rate. Funny enough though, just one last thing before we go into our break and get into some Bobby Dylan.
Dip.
I realized the Hives episode.
Yeah.
That's the first time that you use lyrics to do the description.
Oh, what did I do it? What was the?
I
could look. I'll look.
I'm looking right now. It was wait a minute now and listen to another episode of Know Your Rights. That was the first one, because on Thursday's episode, right before that, it's Friday, and you know what that means. Another episode of Know Your Rights. Maybe you were making a
Thursday. I was trying to make a Thursday Friday joke.
Yeah, and a perfect circle. Circle up for another round of Know Your Rights.
I think I've called this out before, and it's like at this point it just sounds sad, but maybe the best piece of writing I've ever done, period, is the intro I did for Tool.
Yeah, I loved it.
That I would appreciate more feedback on. Yeah. That's fine, everybody. Rob, it's not a big deal.
And Colton.
Stop talk about Tool's discography.
I thought it was brilliant. The Fibonacci sequence as done by Colton.
Oh Lord. All right, everybody. We're gonna let the Blamley help you out. Does anyone else in the Blamley call it the Blamley, by the way?
No.
Okay. Well, know what, Blamley? Circle up. Come on.
We're originals, dude.
Right. The Super Bowl is about to kick off, and we are going to take a break, and we're going to go back. We're going to talk about Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan.
Colter Robbins, I say it's going to be Tails wins. We're going with Tails. You let me know.
All right. Heads.
Well, you have to go the opposite.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Baseball and Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Baseball on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Baseblown on social media and discord.gg/baseblown for our Discord. Based on Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Baseball Entertainment podcast.
All right, we're back. Did they do the coin toss?
I don't see anything, but I thought you would like this. This is we were just talking about Luca. This will bring that conversation to a close very quickly.
We'll see.
LeBron James just posted on Instagram after the Mavs owner Patrick Dumont talking about Luca. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not a huge LeBron fan, but I think this is a nice thing. He says, "When a clown moves into a palace, he doesn't become a king. The palace becomes a circus." Which I know it's a saying. It also could be a Bob Dylan lyric.
I was going to say, is that Dylan?
It feels very Dylan-esque and also hilarious.
That's good. Way to go, LeBron.
Bob Dylan, like a rolling stone.
Robert Effin Zimmerman. Yeah.
It's 1965. Is this the oldest? No. I don't know. I don't want to get our dates wrong now. All this track we've done?
I think it is. Yeah, because we've done Zeppelin, The Who. Those are the two oldest artists, and those are more 70s dominant. Yeah.
I think the span that I chose for The Who was probably... I tried to choose the exact same span from Led Zeppelin. So it's like probably late 60s at the most. Mm-hmm. So this is the oldest. Interesting. Yeah. What is your... We've touched very lightly on Dylan. As we sit now, as you live and breathe, like, do you consider yourself like a Dylan guy, or is Dylan a guy and you listen to Dylan every now and then?
I like Dylan. I respect Dylan, but I'm not necessarily a Dylan guy. Mm-hmm. As I have a vinyl in the background.
It's very nice. Very nice. Yeah.
But it's the greatest hits. You know, it's a greatest essential Bob Dylan, to where I don't think I've listened to a Dylan album.
Okay.
I don't recollect it, and it wasn't my doing.
So I need to look at something real quick. So I definitely, what do I got? Blood on the Tracks, I own. I believe I own the vinyl for the Freewheeling Bob Dylan. I think that's true. Yeah. And I have another the kind of classic greatest hits that he had. It was like the blue, and it's like his hair in the back getting backlit by a stage light or something. I'm just going to make a guess. I own and listened a bit more than you, but not by much.
Yeah, more than likely. You probably have done more intention behind it.
Maybe. I think if anyone's ever heard some of my records, your thought is he's just a big Dylan guy. I think what's funny is that my musical evolution has always been very contemporary initially. My influences have usually been very contemporary. And then as I have gotten older, I've just gone backwards. And that's true with a lot of my stuff. Not even just with music, with a lot of books, movies, whatever. I'm constantly going backwards, not forwards. And it's more rewarding. And so I can't tell you early Colton Saylor stuff. I think Tom Petty's probably the clearest older influence that I had at that point.
Yeah.
But a lot of it's Bright Eyes and, a Ben Gibbard song I heard, Castillo when he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Vendetta, not Bob Red. Dylan. Yeah, exactly. And so I think I am not a huge influenced by Dylan, but I also really do appreciate him. And I think there are guys, not necessarily his contemporaries, but around Leonard Cohen, for example. Mm-hmm. I'm probably more of a Leonard Cohen guy, especially when it comes to my songwriting ideal. Probably closer. I just think his, it's hard to explain why necessarily, but likely so.
I mean, I love The Stranger by Leonard Cohen. It's a great tune, but he's another one to where I respect him, but I'm not necessarily familiar with the entire works.
There's this is actually a great song to talk about too. I think there's a balance of between song and writer, right? In songwriter, like where you're going and which way. And I think Leonard Cohen to me is always a writer first, and the songs come after. And I think I've said this before, I've always gravitated to that in music if I'm listening to songwriting specifically. And I think Dylan is also that way, but considering like this Like a Rolling Stone is such an interesting like Flip meditation on that. Yeah, because it is nothing that people expected of a song, right, at that point. And yet it's also more musical oriented, I think, and more song like than a lot of his other stuff. So,
well, I believe he even says on he was about ready to quit being a singer, I think is the specific term he used.
Right.
When coming into this, because this is basically kind of a what's the quote he says? It's just 20 pages of vomit. You know, where he's just writing out ideas. And then as the song started coming together and as it started turning into a full band piece, he went, you know what, this is what I want to do rather than write books of, you know, like poetry or anything like that. He wants to be almost a musician. I'm paraphrasing there and probably applying more of my own interpretation than his intention. But that's the impression I get, is this was a song to where he decided, you know, I enjoy making music even more than constructing a poem, you know.
It's, you can tell it's the way that the verses work. I don't know if you got this impression too, but without even knowing that story of him like writing a ton of verses and then paring it down, it kind of feels that way. Like, and I'm not saying that as like a, I guess we have, are we doing a 1 out of 100 for our writing of this song?
Of course we are, Colton. Once a month.
I honestly do not have that indication. I know, isn't that great? Now we get to do it all the time. I'm so excited. But the way the verses work are not to me like, it's not he's taking an idea and evolving it with each new verse necessarily. It's it does feel like a kind of meditation on one larger like happening or moment.
Yeah.
And then I've written that way before. Like,
fine. Yeah.
It's I think I don't as much, mainly because I don't know. Now the ideas feel drier. Like I'm clinging to the verses I have.
I mean, I get that, but there's nothing wrong. I know I've used the term before, but the stream of consciousness, I think, is a wonderful way to write a song.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes, and the great thing behind this particular song is there is a established theme.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like we're losing something through his lyrics being a little less specific or deliberate to a story.
Yeah.
You know, it's vague, but it absolutely, I mean, there's a reason that chorus punches so well.
Yeah.
Like, I've listened to this song a million times before today. Like, today is when I, let me read these lyrics. Let me really focus in on these lyrics. But in the end, I'm like, yeah, the chorus sums it up.
I think it's hard where they're, you know, all these different stages of Dylan's career. And I think the early, like, you know, folk, Greenwich Village, the like kind of political folk singer,
the golden era. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's it's interesting, right? I think people can be kind of drawn to that part. And this is my take, everyone, on those early Dylan recordings. Like, I like a lot of those. I think his songwriting, it's interesting how less literal he is there. He uses a lot of like kind of larger symbols for things. And he's it's more poetic, right? To put it in a phrase. Yeah. And I think there are parts of that I really like and appreciate. But there's a stage in Dylan, I think, that Like a Rolling Stone is about there, where he's much more literal, like you're saying. He's not using as much like figurative language and things, at least from my perspective. And like this song, for example, there are some like bits there, some figurative stuff, but it is quite literal. And it really is kind of him just like yapping at this person.
And it's funny you say that, because I went out and searched. I was like, what's the deal with the Siamese cat? You know, with that particular lyric. I'm like, what's the symbolism behind this? And it turns out that it's more than likely an Andy Warhol reference.
Right.
Andy Warhol had like 10 cats at some point or some shit.
And it's exactly like, yeah, you could take it as like, oh, symbol of like, I don't know, Orientalism or whatever you want to call it. Some extravagance. Like ideology. Yeah. And I should point out, there is at least one obvious bit of figurative language. It's the simile like a Rolling Stone. I had to make sure I corrected that. But
and can we say, I am zero part of me is surprised that Rolling Stone said that this was the best song. I feel like it's just because Like a Rolling Stone is mentioned in it.
Are we, I mean, I guess there's no right way to do this. I do feel like we're doing a little bit in reverse. It's hard. It's hard to, this song is huge, man. This is maybe like, I don't know if we've talked about a song on this podcast where there's been that much, like you said, discussion of like, oh, this is the greatest song ever written. Mm-hmm. I'll just go ahead and say, no, it's not.
That's
crazy to me.
It's understandable to say it's crazy, but maybe, I don't know, if we were 60s kids, you know, maybe we would have a different impression. But it's like, yeah, for you and me, I mean, we're in 2025. I mean, there's so much music that's happened in between, but I can say this much, while I don't think it's the best song written, I can put it in contention with hundreds of other songs as best song written because it is incredibly influential.
It's true.
It inspired so many musicians. I mean, even Paul McCartney said, like, oh, I mean, I'm yet another paraphrase. He was like, oh, that just like opened up so many doors. And I do have to say, this song, if it's the greatest song ever written, then I don't know what to tell you. It was not able to get number one over Help by the Beatles.
So I think, and my reaction to that's crazy. The biggest reason for that for me is that's where it becomes hard to talk about someone like Bob Dylan or maybe someone like the Beatles, where the mythology around these artists at this point is like, and we've had artists like this, it makes it very difficult, I think, to contend with them on, I love like what we do on this podcast, right? Where we try to consider at the level of the song, like what they're doing. Like you said, I recognize this, Like Rolling Stone is, for what it was at the time, like an over 6 minute long song that was a pop song, but it was
a single.
Taking what like was expected up until that point of what those kinds of like mass consuming kind of songs were like and totally flipping it. And it's all kind of due to him being a folk singer, right? Because it's a folk song. It's the structure of it is all about coming back to that round of how does it feel, right? Yeah. And that's, it's a chorus, but it's also, it's like, I can see the DNA of like the folk tradition. So it's so cool. I get that. But it's not even, to me, what's hard about that is I find the subject matter in a Dylan tradition, it's not that compelling. Like the subject, it feels very petty, like kind of trite.
Yeah. Well, I think we're very fortunate that there is a full band behind the song. Because I don't think this song stands alone if it's acoustic, if it's a folk, traditional folk acoustic and vocals. You know, the lyrics, I think the lyrics would fall a little short. Even though there's some great alliteration.
Oh, I mean, he was so great at that. I mean, the Dylan stuff were, and this is early Dylan to late, he strings rhymes together.
Yep.
I mean, the first verse, right? Once upon a time, dressed so fine, so time dying, through the bums of dime in your prime. Like, stacking all those imes together, kind of, it gives that rambling kind of vibe to it. And it, I mean, it's funny. We were talking about, Petty does this, right? Mm-hmm. But, and I'll say, I said during that episode, I consider Tom Petty a better, just on a cellular level, a better songwriter. And Dylan was always the better lyricist. I think this is an example of that. Like, it's amazing. It's
And I mean, and I love the fact that he always, right before each chorus, I love the fact that the chorus is actually the resolve to the rhyme scheme from the end of the verse.
Yeah.
You know, I love the meal, deal, steal, conceal.
The little like mini bridge. Oh yeah.
And I did learn how to play this song, and I think that actually the chord progression is brilliant as well. I mean, it, for being so simplified, I love it's in C standard.
Okay.
But every time it hits the, it's a very traditional songwriting.
Is it like C to D to, I'm guessing. I haven't played it.
It's C, F, C, F, C, F, and then like C, D minor, C, F, and then the G, the G is on that, like, bring it around when we hit the meal, and it just creates that, you know, it creates that need for resolve. And
yeah,
for any young songwriter out there that I'm sure is listening to us right now, the five chord is a really good one to end a chord progression on, because it's dying to go back to the one chord.
Mm-hmm.
That is so perfectly executed in this song.
And it is a great, like, what do we call it? Hook feels trite, but to meet that resolve with, like, how does it feel? Like, it's this open, like...
Yeah.
There's a kind of lyric that I'm always jealous of in songwriting where it's so simple, but it's also something that, like, in the chorus, it connects everything. It's like the center of the spider web, and you can do all these intricate, like, lyrical things around it, but the chorus becomes this really simple kind of callback that just everyone can latch to, but it's also, it's not lacking, right, in meaning.
It's absolutely the nucleus of the song.
Yeah.
You know, while I love the instrumentation, the rambling piano that's panned hard left and, you know, like very low in the mix, but is absolutely there. And I have a feeling they probably turned it down in the mix because it's kind of like, okay, the piano is really busy.
Yeah.
You have that little foundation to it, to where it gives this opportunity to everything else. As long as we come back to home, as long as we come back home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in which, you know, to not have a home. go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, you brought it up. Like, should we talk about the arrangement? Because the instrumentation,
for sure.
We were having that conversation before we started recording. I always pair this song with Positively 4th Street. And some of those, like, they're put out the same year. Positively 4th Street is my favorite Dylan song.
That's a very good song.
And I love it. And it's funny enough, I feel like they're in the same theme of, like, just kind of shit-talking. Like, you got a lot of nerve. I don't know.
Yeah. Which I would say Positively 4th Street, you is actually him talking to somebody else, to where potentially in like a Rolling Stone, he might just, instead of saying I, he's using the word you.
Yeah. I could see that, but I can also see them paired because there's like that organ that like there's something about that early mixing too. And I think some of it's maybe the production value, all of that, but they're all so even in the mix to me. Like, of course there's like the harmonica, like the song that launched everyone, including yours truly, wanting to play harmonica while they play guitar. Yep. But it's like the organ, the piano. And I think the keys to me are the MVP. Like that jangle.
Yeah. The jangle. And then there's also the organ, which is to me the actual like lead instrument.
It seems like
wham, 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 wham.
The acoustic feels so like it's so buried.
Mm-hmm.
You almost don't even think it's there.
I'll tell you this much. If I was one of the musicians, the one that I would not want to be on this entire song would be the bass player. I kept trying to listen. I'm like, does a bass player do anything fascinating? Don't get me wrong, bass players are supposed to just hold it down, but that had to have been a long 6 minutes for that bass player. I will play the root note, and every now and then, instead of just playing the root note as, you know, holding out for a whole step, maybe I'll go do 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 do, as opposed to do. Do. but it functions perfectly fine. Or the best thing you can do is not stand out. If you're not going to do anything spectacular, don't stand out for not being spectacular.
Right. Go ahead. I cut you off.
Well, you know what? I kind of lost a little bit of traction on my thought there. But what I can say that I really appreciate about the music is the music feels like every instrument is actually accomplishing to an extent what's going on in the lyrics. Because it feels like every instrument is on its own little path right. within it, where it's like they happen to coexist, but there's kind of, besides the bass, everybody else is off on this weird, I don't know if tangent's the right word, but just in its own universe, and it all of the instruments seem to still meld together well enough.
And it's this like constant ascension, like the chord progressions, right, or keep kind of moving up. There's that climb, and then for the chorus to have that kind of, because the chorus starts with C again.
Yeah.
So it's the same. It is that circle, right? And again, that's like a folk shape to go back to the beginning.
Absolutely.
And it's such a great, like you said, kind of a resolution. The guitar, you were talking to me about the electric guitar. As you were talking, I was trying to find the name again. Mike Bloomfield, that blues player. That little, just to add to your point, that little lick that the joke I always think I have is that's the my solo that I do.
Is that where you just bar your index finger and then hammer.
Hammer with the ring. But it's so
to go back to Friends, this is how we're going to describe guitar, like Phoebe.
Yeah. old lady.
The claw. Yeah.
But no, it's perfect. Like, it is perfect. Like, I think musically, nothing is like amazing. And yet, like you said, it's just because everything is so of a piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's just to really quick on the guitar.
Yeah.
It feels like it's like right before the first chorus is when he gets like a really tasty lick in. And then coming out of that first chorus, he gets a really tasty lick in. Then I feel like I don't really hear him that much more later on in the song. He doesn't, like, that was his moment to shine. Like, I'm going to riff it up right here. And then throughout the remainder of the song, not saying he doesn't do anything, but he doesn't do anything to, like, steal the show as much as that one moment. And, you know, we've talked about this a million times. I love it when somebody picks this one moment in a song and then don't do it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let that be the shining moment and everybody will come back and hear it again later. Like, the drummer pretty much does the rim shot throughout the entire song.
Yeah.
Which shows so much composure to me.
Yeah.
Like, how do you not want to open up at least on the last chorus? Like, how does it feel? Yeah. Doom cat. Doom doom cat.
Yeah.
I'm like, no. he keeps it on that little like, and then every now and then the only way he hits the snare fully is when he uses it as if it was a tom. You know, he uses it for a fill.
Yeah.
Like, tasteful. That is just good musicians. And that also helps to where I think we have to acknowledge in this song that, yes, Bob Dylan wrote a great song. I completely agree. He also got some really great musicians gathered around to make this good song great.
I think that is like the post like electric Dylan, right? Mm-hmm. Like once he goes electric, I think I'm always like, I'm pausing everyone because I'm always like wondering how to phrase it, because I always want to make sure it's clear. Like, I am like hugely influenced by Dylan.
Dude, but just go my route and just let it fumble out of your mouth, dude. Yeah.
But there's something where like what I always see people thinking that he did that was so revolutionary. Like there's stuff he did early on too, where he was like taking older, like folk structures and tunes and things and like putting in these more like modern political lyrics. Like that's, to me, that's a big part of his legacy. Is like modernizing folk music, which I don't think is like a new thing. People have said that too, but that's something that today, right, you see, and it's like so important. I think like musical wise, I've never seen him as, that's why I think I've gravitated to him, is I don't think he's like this amazing songwriter, like writer.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think this goes back to our constant question of what does the term songwriter mean?
Mm-hmm.
We had this talk with Led Zeppelin, where when a song is like just four amazing musicians, or three in that case, like just jamming out and putting in riffs and like these things, where is the writing part of this versus just musicianship, right? And how do you classify it? Like, I think a lot of the great like electric tunes for Dylan, positively 4th Street, I was thinking of like Everybody Must Get Stoned too, where everybody lets.
Yeah, no, Tangled Up in Blue, Hurricane. Yeah. Like those are to where it's like, the band is playing a big role, even though Hurricane is one of my favorite songs by him.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
But,
that's one word. The lyrics are actually pretty fucking spot on.
But the folk rounds, like, you need the lyrics in those songs too. Mm-hmm. I think to your point, the band is what kind of makes it feel more compelling. The lyrics mm-hmm. are always the draw.
Yeah.
And it's
Dylan's that type of artist.
Right.
You know, where he's basically trying to do a Thomas Nast freaking cartoon with his lyrics.
Yeah. And it's funny because that's something I always, not a criticism of myself necessarily, but I know that's the case. Like, and it's something I remind myself where I can have ideas musically that I think are interesting, but I just know that's just not a tradition I'm coming from. And it's not what I feel most comfortable doing. Like,
I get you.
I always feel like I'm able to express myself lyrically and I build the song around that.
Well, it's knowing your strength. Cause I mean, I think I'm an okay lyricist, but for the most part, I do kind of approach a song where it's like, what's going to happen instrumentally is more so my focus. Or I'll definitely make sure that the lyrics tell a story and have some sort of captivating factor. But in my mind, the music has to be something is more the main draw to me. Like, yeah. Where I'm cool with turning down the vocals and, you know, like they don't need to be that much up front. It needs to bleed with the music. Whereas an artist like you, like, no, those lyrics have to be heard. Those lyrics have to be centric in the song's appeal.
Well, and so there are songs I am writing. In fact, I'm thinking of one that I had already written, which is The Watchmaker, right?
I love that song.
Which, I don't know if you have it, you play it. But when we were first starting to, like, when I showed that
maybe
to you
get
all,
my hands on it, yeah.
I don't know. I don't have it. That's why I'm saying that. When I first showed it to you all, and I remember this is something Walter mentioned. Walter was like, we need like a bridge or something, because the height, like the idea is that song is very Dylan-esque, where mm-hmm. it is like a series of verses with a chorus, but not really, like it's the same chord pattern the entire mm-hmm. time. And it's a folk song. And so mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to structure it to make it a full band song was a challenge, and we didn't do it. And the whole idea is like, it would have to be like where you build in maybe the band bit by bit. That's one way to do it, right? And the other way is to go full Dylan, which is band all starts together, they all play, and it really is then the lyrics are what give the song a sense of evolution, because the music doesn't evolve.
And that's where I would go, like, I mean, for The Watchmaker in particular, I understand everybody, maybe it's playing in the background, I'm not sure, but that's a song where I go like, no, go old school Dylan, Colton acoustic guitar, beautiful lyrics.
And all of this, everyone, is to say Dylan, his way of writing a lot of these songs, it's very challenging, right? It feels mm-hmm. simple, and at a level it is, but to pull it off and to make it compelling, it's very hard.
Absolutely. You know the hardest thing I think he must have gone through with this song? Memorizing the fucking lyrics. That's a lot of lyrics, dude. I don't know how you guys do that. I don't know how you folk singers do. I think that's, I always try to say, you know, with like Default American, the reason we'll only have like a verse, a pre-chorus, and then chorus, and then outro is because I'm like, oh, I want to challenge the status quo of singing or of songwriting. I think it's just because I'm like, I'm not going to be able to memorize that many lyrics. Like, what is, like a lot of hip-hop artists who go like, we'll only do, like when they perform the song live, they'll only do, you know, like maybe two verses as opposed to the three or four.
That's always bothered me. Anytime I saw a rapper live, I'm always like, ugh.
It's probably because they're like, I have to do another song. I have to make sure that I can perform it this way. Just
here's
folk singers have excellent memories. That's my takeaway from this.
I disagree, mainly because this is to me the beautiful thing about like writing in the folk tradition is, like, you know, we're also talking about like oral narratives, we're talking about like epic poetry. Like, if you, I do not teach Homer, everyone, that's, I'm not a classicist, but like if you study those things or if you talk about it, like part of like the rhymes or the meter, right? It's the same with Shakespeare, right? Mm-hmm. There are, those things are there in part as a memory device too. And like the rhymes for Dylan, like, again, if you look at that first verse, like dressed so fine, and then he threw the bums a dime in your prime. Like, those are like little memory pockets, right?
Yeah, little mnemonics. Yeah.
Yeah. When you know those rhymes are stringed together and it strings you to the next series of rhymes. Like, it's not easy. And
you're absolutely right.
I forget, but they're there.
I've started covering this song since yesterday. I think the best way I could memorize this song is the first step would be me saying meal deal seal conceal.
Yeah.
That would be my first way of going like, okay, I know that those, that's the order of going into the chorus.
I have this random thought that I think is true, which is there ever been a song since using the word scrounging? I don't think so.
I don't know, but
I
mean,
anyone used scrounging before?
He uses it perfectly.
It's perfect. Well, it's a great, it's the best use of that word, and also maybe the only, and maybe no, maybe I'm gonna try it now. Scratch.
Challenge accepted. Let's both give it a shot.
Scratching. Man, I.
I was gonna ask you. Yeah. I was gonna ask you, what's your favorite lyric in this song? My sans chorus.
Okay.
Because I do think that the chorus is the best lyric.
I do think. I don't know. It's hard because this is one of those things where I don't necessarily think any one line, like I don't think, and this is something I think is true of like, again, like post folk specific. It's like in like the early folk Dylan songs, there are lines that are like there and they kind of hit you, I think. Yeah. But I don't think this is like filled with like nugget, like couplets where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that he did that. But there are little things. I think in verse two, when he's talking about the, he's not selling any alibis, and you stare into the vacuum of his eyes and say, do you want to make a deal? It's just this like little authorial touch, the vacuum of his eyes. There's something very...
I like that. Who do you think the mystery tramp is? Because I theorize it's the devil. It's the devil. Like, it's almost like it's like this is how far you've stooped down. You know, with the mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not telling... All right, you say you never compromise with the mystery tramp, but now you realize he's not selling any alibis. As you stare into the vacuum of his eyes and say, do you want to make a deal? No. That's not me trying to be religious. I think it's just like the imagery that's being created there is like you're in such a desperate place that now all of a sudden you're understanding trying to get yourself out of here and willing to make some extreme sacrifices for it.
It's probably close to that. I mean, I guess... That's also just the way that I operate when I like listen to lyrics and think about them. I'm not always in an interpretive mode. I think, and this is also the same. I'm a prose guy. I'm not a poetry guy when it comes to what I study and what I teach usually. I think whether it is that or not, I think I appreciate it the same, which is it is about
absolutely
like the feeling of turning to desperate places that this person is not used to turning to, but it's, even there, I think it's just like the small bit of detail, and it's the like the vacuum of his eyes is such a prose like thing. It's not a song thing. Like you wouldn't throw it in, and it does get you the syllables you need. But it's I think
within,
part
within
of why
that segment, I think alibis is actually a lazy lyric to throw in.
Is that so? But here's the thing: I think having that second line, there's a lot of those, right? Like even in the first verse where he's saying. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud. Like, that's the thing when you listen to enough Dylan, he's not throwing out A-liners every line. Yeah.
But I fucking love the way that those two lyrics flow together, too. Yeah.
But, and that's the thing, exactly. Right? Yeah. I think he has such a great handle on the fact that he can write those, but then also knows how to write, like, the follow-ups to that are the things that are built around those lines to make them feel more important. Mm-hmm. Like they're not wasted. And it's also that part of the verse. I mean, it's true with every verse, right? Those like the two lines right before that final kind of mini bridge going into the chorus, they have that same structure, the rhyme structure, and it's all a little more simplified sometimes. I don't know. Do you have a favorite line?
It's probably the most clever line to me. And I don't even know if that's completely accurate, but what is it? They're drinking, thinking that they've got it made, exchanging all precious gifts, but you better take your diamond ring and pawn it, babe. And I hate babe, but I love, like, again, within the concept, I just love the idea of, like, talking about, like, the gifts that they're all giving each other and just, like, but you better take this piece of material and pawn it to save your own ass, you know, to get yourself out of this. It's again that like the desperation of the character in question, like just going through that. And I don't know, it's because I still view it as him writing about himself. It just feels like the urgency of all these particular lines in that instance, I like that because like the diamond ring could represent so many different things. It could represent, you know, a failed relationship. It can represent, you know, going from riches to rags.
Yeah.
You know, I just really enjoyed that line. And really that entire fourth verse, I think, is really good. And it culminates in such a cool moment to me. That last chorus, doesn't it sound like his vocals are a little offbeat?
I have to hear it again.
But that's the cool thing about the way he sings this entire song, is the vocal melody is so wavering. These particular notes, and this is coming from somebody like, I write a melody and I stick to that melody.
Right.
You know, within rhythm, within all that. But his is like, he'll delay starting the notes of this melody here and there. And so just the fact that on the last chorus, it feels like it's even putting more of an emphasis. I doubt this was intentional. It probably was just kind of like, oh, I messed up a little bit on singing it. But now it being, you know, written in stone, it just always feels to me like it's just establishing that much more of like, how uncomfortable are you? How does it feel? And he just sings it like a hair earlier.
Yeah.
I admire it so much, and I doubt it was intentional, but I admire the fact that it happened. You know, it's lightning in a bottle type of moment to me.
It's hard to try to express this, I guess. There's like two schools of like kind of rock based songwriting, I guess you want to call it, or like guitar based might be another way of putting it. Like the kinds of songwriting that we usually talk about on this podcast, I tend to think of like two different schools, and there's maybe more, but it's the way my brain understands it. And one way is like a song as a straight line, and to be honest, the band that I usually associate that with are someone like the Beatles, where it is like targeted. There are like very conscientious ways that the song's going to evolve. It usually deals more in like the verse, bridge, chorus kind of a structure. And it's like more classical based and like more traditional in how we structure a pop song, right? And how we understand it. And no judgment to that, no value to that. It's just, that's one philosophy, right, of putting something together. Dylan's the person I put in the other string, which is not so much a line, but a circle. And within the circle, it's like all, like the idea of the song, like once you walk into the circle, you're in the song. And that's where like, we're talking about like the verse, chorus, like that folk kind of around to it too. And even comes with like, it's kind of like jazz, right? We're in jazz. It's like setting the, like whatever chord structure there is. And then people riff on that. It's like the modal, right? The mode they set. And so even within like vocal melody, right? Everything is subject to fluctuate and change, but it's all within the circle of the song. And so like my early somewhat of a criticism that the song doesn't really evolve, to be honest, it's also, that's just part of the, to me, like the philosophy of the song is built on, right? Where everything is, you're walking into this parameter that Dylan has set up. And the minute you walk in, it's like everything is playing, everything announces itself immediately, right? And that you still get these small little changes, like you said, which make the song feel like alive. Like it feels like a like living organism.
It technically is. I mean, they did, I believe this was the fourth take of the song. So they went in there and they just were like, we're going to play this a shitload of times. I think they, in fact, there's a quote from Bob Dylan from the Dave Porter. It's like, my voice is shot. Let's just come back and do it again. Let's come back tomorrow and give it another go. Couture, they were like trying out 3-4 times, making sure, you know, that little waltz vibe. But when by the time they reached this take, they ended off doing about 10 more takes afterwards, but came back to this one and went like, this is the best out of all of them. And I think that's the cool thing behind the song, is it's a moment captured as opposed to, you know, there's no way in hell that piano player did the same thing every single time. Like, oh no, I have my structure. I absolutely do this little piano flutter here. And it's like, no, he knows that that piano flutter is going in at some point.
Yeah.
That's the cool thing about this song, is it's so loose. It's so free. And I think it's what you said, Dora. It's like you kind of step in and go like, exist in here. Whereas, yes, the Beatles would be a lot more of, hey, George, you missed your lead part here. You got to do it right here.
Well, like the chord changes, everything is there's a calculation to it, which again, like that is
there's no right or wrong in this. Yeah.
Right. But there I've always seen that split, which I tend to, right? And this is where our tend to gravitate to that and I'm calling it the Dylan School is inaccurate. It's like he invented it, but I tend to gravitate to that side of songwriting. But yeah. I can't.
Well, I mean, it's basically when you try to have that argument just to defend my Beatles on this, that's a John Paul argument anyway. Like Paul's going to be like, no, we need to have it a lot more regimented. We have to have it a lot more precise. And John's going to be like, loosen it up. Loosey goosey, baby.
I waver back and forth. I know it's not yet, but the Beatles episode we are going to have, I'm still internally trying to figure out which of those two I prefer. I don't know if Beatles fans usually do that. Is there like a John and Paul, like, absolutely. Oh, I'm a Beatles fan. Are you a Paul guy or a John guy?
Absolutely. There's the John Paul. When Robbie and I got going in this band and we both were like, I'm a huge Beatles fan, and he was a much bigger Beatles fan than I even was. But immediately I'm like, well, actually, I think I prefer a lot of Paul songs. And he's like, no, John's the best songwriter. Like, is he? I think you like John's personality more, but I think Paul's a better songwriter. And there starts a
My early understanding is I find Paul to be the better lyricist than John. John's lyrics, we don't have to do this right now. We don't have to go.
No, let's do it. So John is more.
I do want to say one thing. I'm kind of running out of things to talk about. I don't know if you are, but I want to mention.
No, when I look talk at about the Beatles.
Oh, of course we could. When okay, I look at the, yes. I got a game of Finspan waiting for
that's
me.
That's true,
buddy.
That's true.
I look at the personnel for this, right? Mm-hmm. And this is Dylan on vocals, guitar, harmonica, Mike Bloomfield guitar, Bobby Gregg drums, Paul Griffin piano, Al Cooper organ, Bruce Langhorn tambourine. All of them have Wikipedia pages. The only person without a Wikipedia page is the bass player, Joe Macho Jr. So, hey, Joe, good job, man.
Joe, you held it down, dude. Somebody had to be the rock.
Someone had to be the rock. I think Bruce Langhorn, the fact that I guess he was other things too. The fact that he has his own Wikipedia page is crazy. And not that Joe Macho Jr.
That was the tambourinist?
Yeah.
The tambourine man?
Well, he was apparently like a session guitarist too. But he did play apparently tambourine on that track.
Come on. Tambourine man. Sometimes my dad humor just goes right over people's heads.
I do want to say,
hey, Mr. Tambourine man, you did a great job in this song.
You were asking me before my favorite line for this song. Yeah. My favorite Dylan line period is Tambourine man, where he goes, what is it? It's just a ragged clown behind. I wouldn't pay it any mind. It's just a shadow you're seeing that he's chasing. I love that.
Brilliant.
That shadow parts.
I think we can both clearly there's going to be further conversation about Bob Dylan. That's because he is such a fascinating like enigma of an artist. Like we have to come back to him because there's so many. There's the made up mythos that is kind of sometimes of Bob Dylan's doing, because he's a habitual liar.
Yeah,
you know,
he's a trickster.
Yeah, he's a trickster. You brought it up when we were talking about Nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he is a genius. I do classify him as a music genius.
Mm.
Like as an artistic genius, a musical artist, I would give him genius.
I guess the way I would put it is his like approach to songwriting and lyrics and art in general to me feels really pure. And it's not like a ethical evaluation. It's just there's something so pure in listening to like a song like this and others where I don't hear. It's not the same as sincere, by the way, what I'm saying. It's just more. There's the philosophy by which it feels like he approaches the word and approaches like putting like this together. I remember when he won the Nobel Prize for Literature. I was, you know, at an English department. Obviously, I was in grad school. And there are people, and there was a small ripple, right, of in like the literary world of people going, why is Bob Dylan winning for a Nobel Prize for Literature? And at the time, and I have the same argument I made then, I was like, it makes tons of sense, because in a way, he was one of the first people to make it feel like there was a literary quality to songwriting to me.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
And I think that's where like people who are influenced by him, like Leonard Cohen and John Darnielle from the Mountain Goats, like way in the future, like there's like the capital W writing part of it. He kind of, and at least to me, establishes, and I know it makes perfect sense to me. So I'm excited to talk more about Dylan. And this song not even being in my top five favorite Dylan songs, it's still like you said, learning things like you're bringing up, like it makes me appreciate it even more.
Like what specifically? No, it's playing.
Oh, it's just all the great things you said, man. I'm just sitting here going, I'm just taking in your knowledge.
No, and that is a fun part for me because I'm not as familiar with him. I mean, for lack of a better term, I'm not as familiar with him. So I'm looking forward to definitely diving into some songs that maybe I haven't get this song even I hadn't given that much thought to. Like I've always heard it as a song, as instruments. And
don't you think this is at risk of being our overrated? If we were doing like a traditional Dylan category,
it would be at risk though. It would be at risk. Because the only other one that pops into my head, I think, is an incredible song. Like Blowing in the Wind would be one that I would potentially go with, like, oh, that's overrated, but I think it's a great song.
It might be his best. I don't know. Yeah. Like, it's
I would only be going off of the Spotify thing, going like, oh, too many people keep saying that song's the best.
I'm looking up right now. What do you think is the most listened to Dylan song on Spotify?
The one we just talked about.
Like Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
Let's look it up. What have we got here, people?
Oh, I thought you had it already.
It's loading. It's gotten there.
What do you predict before it pops up?
Well, I'm seeing it right now, and I am shocked. It is not Like a Rolling Stone is number two.
Okay.
Blowing in the Times They Are Changing seems to be the third most.
God,
Blowing in the Wind is the one after that. Number one, though, by a wide margin, Knocking on Heaven's Door.
Oh, come on. That is just...
That's overrated, everybody.
That's overrated. Overrated, we're hands done. Down. Because I had to tell... You know what, Miller? You're listening right now. Miller didn't believe me when he was playing the Guns N' Roses version. I was like, you know who did this originally?
Knocking on Heaven's Door.
I think that's why it's overrated to me now, because I'm just going like, is this because of Guns N' Roses that Bob Dylan's most popular song?
And I'm also terrified. Guns N' Roses, extremely overrated. Good night, everybody. We're gonna
go into our commercial break. So for everybody who wants to, for after hours, we'll see you on the other side of this commercial break.
0 through 100, everyone.
When it comes to making the goings-on of the world entertaining, we got you covered. The Chit Show is a news, pop culture, geek culture, and music podcast hosted by none other than Danny, a.k.a. Danko, and me, Leo, a.k.a. DJ Brute. Tune in as we cover all sorts of topics with a very opinionated and wild twist. The Chit Show Podcast, where chit chat and shit shows come together for your entertainment. Tune in on your favorite streaming platforms with new episodes dropping every other Monday. Again, that's The Chit Show, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Danko, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Baseblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're going to end with a glorious 0 out of 100 single song rating system brought to you by the great Robert McGregor. Thank you so much, buddy.
No problem.
I have two updates for you. And for those listening after, of course, you're listening after, it's 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. You'll just think how quaint this was for us to remember this. One is that the coin flip, as best I can tell, unless the internet is leading me astray, the Chiefs won the coin flip, and they called tails, and the coin landed on tails.
Hey, I got a Culturarabis under my belt.
You nailed the Culturarabis. Also, I didn't get to mention I was wrong about my Grammys Culturarabis. I said that Taylor Swift would win because I was being a fatalist. And who did you say would win? I believe
I said Beyonce.
And Cowboy Carter. Also, the Grammys are insane and do not pay any attention to any of them. Speaking of,
what's your rating for Bob Dylan?
99. I don't know. I honestly have no idea. What is your rating for Bob Dylan?
0 out of 100. I'll call it. If I have to consider all of his songs, I'm going to give this one an 85.
Honestly, the first number in my brain was 85.
There we go.
I think it's an 85.1. Clear.
Okay.
Clear cut.
You don't want to add any other numbers to that?
I don't have a number to add. Here's the thing. Like you said, this is not my favorite. And I still think everything we talked about in the past hour is true. Like the composition of it, the thoughtfulness of constructing lyrics and that. At the end of the day, and here's where to me, like, great song versus like really good song is there's nothing about that song that like I come away with and it's like making me see something differently or like putting something to me in like the art like gives me this way of envisioning an idea or it allows me to connect to something. It's a vindictive song, I think. And to me, that nature is, it can be like fruitful and it can make for a good song, but it leaves me a little hollow after it. Does that make sense?
I can see what you mean. Like you don't necessarily walk away from it feeling changed.
Like, I mean, here's the thing, like how many roads, right? How many roads man walked down? I think that song like gives you this like deep, I mean, it's like, you know, almost satire at this point, but there's a kind of deeper like philosophical quandary at the core of that song. And I think a lot of great Dylan songs are like that, or like Don't Think Twice, where it's this like so fragile, beautiful, mournful spirit, right? Or It Ain't Me, Babe. Like there's songs where they're maybe just as like based in the interpersonal, but there's a depth to them. And I personally don't get a depth to like a Rolling Stone. And that's why I think people always saying it's the best Dylan song or Rolling Stone saying it's the best song. That's where I go back to my initial thing is that's crazy to me because it just for as full of like life and all these other things as Dylan was, it's the most hollow of his songs to me.
That's interesting because I still take from it that this song is not just for everybody. It's written at everybody. To where I can see how somebody would take away from it that it's like this vindictive thing to where it's supposed to be written from this, I think even Dylan said to where initially he thought the song was written from a point of anger, but it just turns out that the song is really just written from a point of explaining, you know, and when I listen to the song, there's so much of a mirror that this song kind of has to where I can see my own reflection in the song.
I think
this song nails it, and if it weren't for the chorus, I think it would fall apart. But I just think that this song has such a good of a solid address to where it's like, you know, when you feel down, the rest of the world is going like, we all feel down. You know, there's almost this universal theme to it. And when I was really looking at the lyrics, and I think it explains a lot of the vagueness and a lot of the lack of specificity to the lyrical direction. But the fact that it keeps coming back to this concept of like, how does it feel? I like that idea of it not necessarily being used as, you know, this snarky way of just like, oh, yeah, how's that feel? You know, as opposed to what happened to me. But it's just like, how does it feel? You know, like there might even be more of a yearning to that question. But that's all open to interpretation.
But I mean, you make a really good point. I think I want to slightly edit when I say hollow. I think that means I think it's like totally lacking in like kind of emotional depth.
I guess
what I maybe to put it another way is I think it is striking an emotional register that I find other Dylan songs to strike ones that to me at least feel more. There's a complexity to what he's trying to get across.
Well, there's no way I can argue against that because I too find there to be better Dylan songs.
But you did make a very good argument for reconsidering it. Anyone, this was a lot of fun, man. I am excited for this new format. We are.
Me too. I think it's going to work out really well.
We're filled with joy. We got Kike back. Things are looking up.
What's the score?
That's right. That was the other Super Bowl update. Well, the last time I checked, it was 7-0 Eagles. So things are really looking up.
I don't think so.
Yeah, and that's isn't that so, like, what's going to happen? And, like, people listening 2 weeks later are like, you quaint little Colton. Yeah. You thought...
At the end of the fourth quarter, the Eagles have to be up by 2 scores.
Yeah.
Or they're probably fucked.
I mean, if you're the Falcons, even more. You got to really lay it on. Anywho.
But my God, Lakers fans, wasn't that a great debut by Doncic?
It's... So we spent a very, like, frantic... like three or four minutes trying to figure out how to do the ends of these episodes now. And we figured it out to our credit. So I think it's not worth explaining to you all people. You don't care as much. What we are going to say is Rob has a song that I'm going to guess. And next episode is Sunny Day Real Estate. But this is the song that in 1 month's time we will be discussing. So you have 1 month, everybody, to listen to just one song. I know listen to the complete discographies, so we're giving you a break too.
Yep.
One song.
All right, let's see. What's a
You don't have a song, do you?
Oh, I have a song.
Okay.
But there's an inaugural moment here to where, how do I do a hint about one song?
Yeah, that was just me over the phone going, so you want to do Wicked or Bob Dylan? That was the hint that I gave Rob. Right.
My first hint, Mary. You can determine the spelling in your own mind.
Christmas?
See, you're a different spelling.
That's well, I Peter, Paul, and Mary. Mary go lightly.
The song is in the key of C.
Okay.
I'm continuing tradition here.
Wait. Yeah, right. One second. I think our ability to use Google is not really decided on.
That's not fair. Yeah. Well, while you're Googling this, let me see. Let.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Why not?
Let it be.
Yeah, why not?
We're not like doing everybody. We're not like DEFCON 5 Beatles episode, but we are.
We're getting to ease it in a little bit.
We are. Yeah. That's right. That's a great way to put it. We are going to talk about Let It Be by the Beatles. Is that correct?
It is Let It Be by the Beatles, a Paul song. So sorry, so, John.
It's the Beatles like.
sorry, John fans. We're going to be doing a Paul number here.
Yeah. Well, this is exciting, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. The sleep is going to be epic.
This is an excited voice you hear. Yeah. That's all it is. So we have Sunny Day Real Estate, everybody. Next episode. Enjoy again. And then we have Let It Be by the Beatles right after that. It's going to be a great month of February into March.
I agree.
Well, God bless America. I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing with this. God bless America. God bless the Super Bowl. I don't know.
Go Eagles.
Go Eagles. Go 10 days to spring training. Spring training will have started by the time we record. That's worth celebrating. And God bless Finspan.
Oh, yes. You go swim with the fishes, buddy.
I'm going to swim with the fishes, buddy. Love you, Rob. We'll see you all later, everybody. Have a good 2 weeks.
Love you too, everybody.
Love you too.